This is the Freedom Fiends, Hour 1. And we are broadcasting from Podbay 4B, 17 feet above sea level at Intergalactic Bayou Studios, where we alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenating radio waves. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at bipcot.org. That's BIPCOT.org. My name is Ben Stone. With me on the other side of the world by way of Fiend Phone is Bill Bupert. Bill, we're getting to be a regular weekend team here.
Oh, I like it, Ben. And here we are together again, philosophically terraforming the planet one disobedient surf at a time. I myself am at approximately 1,700 meters above sea level, not 17. And I'll bet I'm halfway around the globe.
That's about accurate. And up in the sky it compared is. To where I'm at. I'm down right down here on sea level, almost looking out across the Gulf of Mexico. It's so nice down here in the south.
The south is nice, and maybe we can touch on what some evil death rays that have been transmitted from Mordor on the Potomac are doing to the south as we speak.
Oh, my goodness. You know, they have, I hate to sound this way, but I'm going to sound this way. Yankees, for 150 years, have taken great pleasure in mocking and just doing everything they could to look down upon and, you know, try to make people in the South feel like they're less than the Yankees are. And I realize we're on some radio stations in northern states, but I think there's a real I've traveled, just like you, Bill, I have traveled all over the United States. And I think there's a real vast difference between just geographically living in the North as opposed to having that Yankee mentality that is so prevalent. I think specifically right around the New York City, Boston, kind of up and down the eastern seaboard in that area, and to a lesser extent, it bleeds out into the countryside. But it's just horrible in Washington D.C. And right up through the coast up there. It's just a mentality that they look down their nose on all things Southern or anything in Southern culture. And it's not about, I'm not buying the argument that it's race. It's not about race. It is entirely the arrogance of Yankees and those of that mindset.
I agree. I think there's Marxism in the Potomac. I think there's Marxism in the Atlantic Ocean. I think there's Marxism in the Pacific Ocean. And that's why this bi-coastal region, because I consider the left coast to be quite Yankee in its philosophical orientation. And when I describe Yankee is that kind of mentality where not only are we better than you, but we know what's best for you who ain't us, and we're going to make you do what we want you to do, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation. You know, I think it was H.L. Mencken that was describing the Puritan, and he said that a Puritan, how was it he said that? That pretty much anything that's fun, they're against. Or anytime anyone's enjoying,
that's right.
You know, anything that's enjoyable, they're against it. And I think that's kind of, you know, the Puritans sort of morphed into the Yankees over the years. And I think they come from that same mentality of, you know.
That same Soviet stock.
Yeah. It very much is a socialism, yes. You know, top-down, central planning everything, central planning your religion for you. And if you don't like it, we'll just burn you at the stake.
So maybe Homo Sovieticus is actually its epicenter in the United States, maybe in the Northeast, with of course satellite location on both respective coasts. You know, here you want to have fun, go hunting in the South.
Oh yeah.
Go fishing in the South. As a matter of fact, I attended that black church or that white church or whatever church you are, and I'm not a religious guy, but I have religious friends. I love eating with Southern folks after church.
I love that. Yeah.
Because you got people pulling up in their vans or pickups or cars, and they have a minimum of two coolers worth of food that they have brought to share with their neighbors, their friends, their family, and their community.
Yeah.
And they dig it. For them, food is something of a catharsis. And unfortunately, like in Mississippi, it's one of the most obese states in the nation. And the South has a lot of that. You know what? You and I, as other men, we hear our women say, oh, you just look gorgeous. But then later on, they're talking to their friends and say, didn't she look gorgeous? But she's just getting a little fat. Bless her heart. Because if you say bless her heart, that's sort of, it's sort of an excuse. It sort of absolves you from having taken a measure of her increasing girth, for instance. I love the gracious, genteel antebellum and sort of post-antebellum society that is in the rural South. And you'll find the rural South has a whole lot of satellite entities in northern, in the inland Northwest. You can go all the way down from the border in Arizona, all the way up to the Canadian border through Idaho, and travel in a straight line back and forth through Utah, through Montana, parts of Washington. And you're quite the traveler all over the place. And you get the sense that they're who they might be in your business, but really don't want to be in your business at the point of a gun. I get the sense, especially from political elites, of course, but those who apologize for the political elites, like the masthead editorial in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and all the rest of those absolutely execrable newspapers, which are going out of business, thank goodness. But they're not like that. They're not people who think that, well, this is good for me, and I'm going to make it good for you, whether you like it or not. I just posted the latest essay by John Myers on ZeroGov.com, my website, and he talks about this mountain instance that has occurred since the 18th century in America against increasing centralized authority and, as they're fond of saying, revenuers.
Yeah.
And it's the mountain region that allows them to have that kind of independence that they had for so long.
Yeah. A couple weeks ago, whenever Porkfest was, there was some state revenue agents that came out to Porkfest, a couple of them, and they dotted around.
That.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to just scream at the computer, and because the folks up there at Porkfest were referring to them as revenue agents, they're revenue agents. And I just wanted to scream at the computer and say, call them what they are. They're revenuers. That's all they are. They are dirty, filthy revenuers. And in that article, the writer of that article you're referring to there at ZeroGov, he actually pointed out that for a good portion of the time, the government recruited criminals literally right out of prison, giving them
yes.
the jobs
yes.
as revenueers, because that's the only kind of scum
giving
that you could
them
get.
Giving them badges.
Yeah. And we see that today with the
exactly.
FBI.
Exactly, yeah.
The FBI today is now recruiting some of the worst dregs of society to try to entrap other people who are just good, you know, normal people, try to entrap them into doing or saying something wrong and, you know, get out of their own sentences for their own crimes by cooperating with the FBI. It's become a common thing now.
I urge everybody in the audience to look up the Hootery Militia Trials. And halfway through the trials, when you read the transcripts, or maybe you're able to read some of the anecdotal accounts, the jury was actually laughing at the government agents and what they were trying to produce because
wow.
it was so ill-conceived. I mean, even for layman jurors who aren't experts in that kind of thing, but looking at this and they're saying, you got an organ grown out of your forehead if you think I'm going to believe that. You know what I wanted to see them say, though, Ben, when the revenuers, and I like your point about the revenuers, what I wanted them to do is I wish that at the time they could tell everybody, in case somebody comes, all I want you to say is smile at them and say, we have no need of your services. And that's the only thing they say to them.
Yeah.
Sorry, we have no need of your services.
The ones you were referring to there a minute ago, was that the group in Michigan, was it, or right in the Ohio-Michigan area?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Yeah.
But it's like you've been alluding to. If you look at, and the audience can look this up on the net, start page it, all the FBI brood homegrown terrorist plots, they all seem to be almost sponsored by the FBI. And the FBI in recent years just reflagged itself from instead of being a crime-fighting organization to being a national security organization.
Ugh.
And all of us know what national security means. That means unlimited power for the government to make human transactions of every stripe transparent to whatever the government seeks to investigate.
Yeah.
And if that isn't the road to Orwell's 1984, I don't know what is.
Yeah. And, you know, that's not to say that we're supporting any of those people like that are in those militias or whatever. There's a lot of mistakes that are being made by people who think that they're moving towards some type of liberty or some type of freedom. And, you know, they think they've got all their ducks in order, and they think they've got all the right magic words to say when they get taken to court. But, you know, it's not to say that we're supporting all those kind of people that do that. But the dirty tricks that the FBI has pulled under the guise of it being law, it's just disgusting. The way that they entrap people and the methods that they use, it's just not civil. You know, it's not what proper people do in society.
It is, and here's something I want to use to illustrate this. Glenn Greenwald, although he may not be a confrere of yours and mine when it comes to Glenn Greenwald in my mind, he does work for The Intercept. He recently talked about the case with this fellow named Sir Robertson, who happens to be a black Muslim in Florida. He has been jailed, and I'm going to read this real brief to explain to you what happened. And they're so interesting, they do whatever they want. I quote, Robertson case attracted national attention after prosecutors attempted to argue earlier this year that the contents of his book collection constituted evidence of his terrorism. Prosecutors allowed 20 titles from the more than 10,000 e-books Robertson owned, highlighted a selection of controversial passages, and used that to argue that he sent as though he were a terrorist. None of Robertson's charges, conspiracy for the false return of Iraq, were terrorism offenses, but they tried to make a terrorism offense. Again, if the audience search this, they discover that the DEA and a lot of three-letter agencies are using this whole terrorism motif to pursue the most banal crimes, to include, of course, mostly malum prohibitum crimes, where the government says, what crime? Because the government's a victim, and that kind of thing. I mean, it's outlandish when you think about it. A book collection? You and I are both pretty voracious readers, Ben, and I have a very, I mean, besides my house, I had a library annex attached to my house. I have a room devoted to books. I have an away library that I bring with me. My book collection is so big, I have a library and an anti-library.
Yeah, and then you have a situation like with this guy trying to be the next president, Rand Paul, who actually made the statement to Sean Hannity on his show that a person a person was attending radical political speech, that you should be able to lock them up, send them to prison, or possibly even deport them if they didn't have all their paperwork, you know, if they didn't have their permissions right. Well, we're going to jump away for a break for the market, and we're going to be right back on the Freedom Fiends.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
The central scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
And I'm Ben Stone, back with Bill Bupert on the Freedom Fiends. And we're talking on opposite sides of the world here, and still, you know, the computers nowadays are just almost magic. But before,
especially if they're apples.
Before the break, we were referencing, what is the name of that group up there in Michigan that were harassed so badly?
The Hootery Militia.
Yeah, yeah. It got kind of scary for me because I was living in Western Ohio at the time, and my last name is Stone, and some of those members of that were named Stone, and I have family, you know, all over that whole area. And I was very concerned, that some idiot government goon would get confused with, you know, family members and drag me into that somehow. So I was trying back in that time frame to be very careful about what I said.
Absolutely. We don't live in a free country anymore. You know, those people in the audience who think that they do, they really need to examine what's happened to this country that they've had since 2001, much less for those of you who are listeners who have listened to Ben and I and the Fiends for a long time. We take this all the way back to 1791, but we won't burden you with that right now.
You know, a couple shows back when we were talking, about the rule of law and how really it's kind of a myth. It's not really They have all these layers and layers and layers of laws. They have so many laws that there, it's just not possible for any one person to know what's legal and what's illegal anymore. And I think that's by design. I think they do that so that they can wrap you up in legal mumbo jumbo anytime that they want to. I think it was, if it wasn't Stalin, it was one of those people right in around that group that said, essentially, you know, you tell me who you want arrested and I'll take care of the law end of it. We'll figure out a law
that's
that
right.
Broke.
It was Felix Dzerzhinsky in the NKVD. And of course, Stalin was famous, and I'm paraphrasing, for say, who does what to whom, because you want to be the who and not the whom. Dr. Seuss would be proud.
Yeah. He used English better than most Americans.
That's right. Especially today in the modern idiocracy we live in.
But really, that's what law is. I mean, it's a series, it's layers and layers and layers of confusing mumbo-jumbo put together for the purpose of deceiving the masses into thinking that they have something like justice.
Now, I agree with that, but I also agree with others who have observed that bureaucratic traction and bureaucracies driving forward with maddening rafts of regulation that are just huge, and you know, bookshelves are creaking in law offices across the fetid plain with all these regulations that have been created. For instance, the National Socialist Healthcare Law that was passed by the Congress and approved by Roberts not once but twice in the Supremes originally had 2,000 pages. And when we heard the original noise about that, we heard the usual suspects in the Congress say, well, we'll pass it first and then we'll read it. Well, they did that. 2,000 pages is a lot. You and I, like I mentioned before, are voracious readers. That's a pretty sizable book. As a matter of fact, an epic novel has 110,000 pages. It's in the publishing industry, it's 300 to 350 words per page. So I'll let the audience do the math on that. But how many pages do you think that the HHS, Health and Human Services, has developed to execute and administer the National Socialist Healthcare? What we all know is it's more than 2,000 pages. Could we agree on that, even if we don't have the number?
Yeah, yeah.
And they have no idea of the second and third order effects of what that law is going to do. It's much like modern medicine today in Big Pharma. My wife's a nutritionist, and I know that you and I are rather unconventional in our diets and what we'll fuel our bodies with. But today what you have is you go to a doctor's office and the doctor will say, take this pill, this pill, this pill, this pill, and this pill. And if you read the side effects of those side by side, and then all of a sudden you put 1, 2, 3, 4 of those in your body at once, not only are they all across purposes, but who knows what they're doing tangentially or with second and third order effects to harm you in a way that's even worse than what you're trying to stop and obviate in the first place. So in a tortured analogy, I'm trying to say that what you do to your body with Big Pharma is what bureaucracy, the Congress, the executive, and government does to the entire country on a daily basis.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. And you know, there's literally a trickle-down effect in the sense that the human body oftentimes can't absorb all of those drugs that we're, you know, pushing into it. And a lot of it literally goes into the water systems through urination and then flushing and all this, and ends up in the water table.
Indeed. Annelids.
Be right back, folks. Stick with us.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
So before the break, we were talking about law, and a couple of episodes of the Freedom Fiends back when Bill and I were together again like we are today, we were talking about law specifically in the Old West and how really when before, you know, you put law in giant air quotes, before law moved into the Old West, people got along pretty good. They figured things out. There was, you know, commerce. They, when they had confrontations, they figured them out one way or the other. And then when law came into the Old West, it fouled things up so bad that they literally had to form committees of vigilance, vigilante committees, to deal with the corrupt politicians and the corrupt, you know, police and corrupt sheriffs and so forth. The committees of vigilance were not a reaction to crime out among the populace. The committees of vigilance were a response to the corrupt politicians and law enforcement that came into the West with government. And, you know, it's been all distorted and twisted by movies and paperback novels and Hollywood all through the years and everything. But that's really what law does. Law comes in and pollutes an otherwise perfectly well-functioning society with these magical and mystical ideas that somehow this one small group of people, their will is going to, you know, is going to make everything better for everybody. When in fact, it's all about that one small group of people filling their pockets and having their own egos fluffed.
I agree. If I can make one addendum to our conversation, since we're at the top of the second half hour of the first hour of the show, and that's this. This is a teaching hospital that Michael Dean runs so that the voices of liberty come through loud and crystal clear, and Ben and I are students of Michael. But the other thing that Ben and I are students of is that liberty is a complex affair in this regard. Liberty is a simple affair in this regard. You should own yourself, and you should not deliver yourself or any component of who you are to anybody absent your consent. That's the simple part. Here's the hard part. We've got to deprogram tens of thousands of hours of government education, government media exposure, all this stuff. Everything that we tell you, most likely we will pepper it with references to books, to articles, to further reading, things like that. Because I would question anybody in my audience's intellectual veracity if I can convince them in 5 minutes of changing however many decades they've been on this planet in their worldview. I would be suspect of that. So we are going to, in addition to this being a teaching hospital for Liberty Broadcasting, this is a teaching hospital to show you how to learn the epistemological pillars and the philosophical pillars and the ethical pillars of what makes liberty work and how you can truly grok what it's about. That's Ben and I really dig doing that together. We really riff well together. It's a good jazz duet, I think, in doing that kind of thing. So I just want to put that out there. And I wanted to add to what you were saying that fast forward about 120 years now from that Old West in which these alien laws were introduced, because we're not saying that laws aren't good. We're saying malum in se laws are good that don't have to be administered by the government. What we're saying is that the kind of rule of law that we've grown up to so worship because of government schooling, government programming, the media, all that kind of thing, that rule of law is a myth. There is no dispassionate, objective justice in America. That statue you see of Lady Liberty blindfolded, holding the scales of justice, That's a chimera. That's an illusion. That's a hologram because it doesn't work that way. Ben alluded to this in the first half hour. If the government wants to pick you up for something, they can put every one of us Americans, as long as they have room in the cages for us, unless they exterminate us at the point of entry when their badged concierges come to fetch us and kidnap us. But every one of us can be put away for years right now. Everyone knows about overzealous prosecutorial neglect, prosecutorial injustice, the whole system set up so that if Ben and I are defendants, and we are standing in that courtroom in the country of the United States. Ben and I and our retained defense attorney privately are the only non-government employees in that room that could be actionable in our fate.
Yeah, and you don't have much of a chance going up against them. They have almost unlimited resources, and you only have your pocketbook, you know? And they can drag these things out for decades if they want to.
May I say that they have not only their pocketbook, but they have ours?
Yeah, exactly.
Because in essence, they're using your money to hang you. I saw this great meme on, I think it was Twitter, where it shows a picture of a guy with a noose around his neck, and that noose is tied to the branch of a sapling, and he's watering that sapling, and they say, this is what voting's about.
Yeah, that's a good comparison. That's
It's what it is.
Yeah, it's far more accurate than most people would realize. The American people are hanging themselves by tolerating and nurturing this thing that they've allowed to exist, this government, this monster.
Yeah, because they're not nurturing the tree of liberty in this case. They're nurturing the tree of Orwellian totalitarianism.
You know, and I like to point this out, too. You're referencing a statement by Thomas Jefferson where he said that from time to time, the tree of liberty needs to be refreshed with the blood of patriots and with tyrants. And a lot of people will quote that. A lot of liberty-oriented people, a lot of Republicans like to quote that. But what most people do not understand is that that was not a quote in reference to the tyranny of the British. That quote was after the War of Independence was over, and Shay's Rebellion was taking place. Not long ago, Prof. CJ from the Dangerous History podcast did a whole podcast on this, and it's really worth listening to. But Shay's Rebellion was made up of essentially the 2-minute quick overview of it. It was made up of farmers and former soldiers of the Continental Army who fought the War of Independence, came out of the war, won the war, went back to their farms and found out that their tax base had just been increased to the point of where not only was their money that they had been paid, the script that they had been paid for being in the military for years, not only was that useless, but in addition to that, their farms were being taken right and left by these political elite and the well-connected bankers and so forth that were running the state of Massachusetts at the time. And their only recourse was to rise up in arms against this new tyranny, which was the state of Massachusetts. And so when Thomas Jefferson said that the Tree of Liberty needs to be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants, he was referring specifically to George Washington and the types of aristocrats specifically in Massachusetts. Washington was down in Virginia, but Washington supported those guys. Jefferson was referring to rebellion against the existing government in Massachusetts, not against the British government.
Indeed, and when you look at the awful laws and the totalitarian laws and the corn laws and all the laws that were passed by the Crown prior to 1775, it was a whole raft of stuff that drove people to distraction and eventually revolution. Then they fight the 8-year conflict, and then you have the Whiskey Rebellion. And in the Whiskey Rebellion, 3 years after the Constitution is ratified, there's George Washington, the head of an army, putting down a tax rebellion. And I'm certain it's 1794, a mere 11 years after cessation of hostilities with the United Kingdom. And a lot of those farmers, probably like the Shays Rebellion, Ben, were thinking, haven't we done this before? Deja vu.
Yeah.
Why is this happening again? It's just like Benjamin Martin's character says in the movie The Patriot. You know, do I want to trade the totalitarians abroad for totalitarians at home? I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he's saying. And since that time, this nation state in America has metastasized into a liberty robbing and destroying enterprise of the highest magnitude.
I always find it interesting, if you look back to the Whiskey Rebellion, and the article that's over there at ZeroGov points this out. There was open rebellion against the whiskey laws all throughout Appalachia. But Washington, and specifically Hamilton, that was Washington's hammer at the time.
And one could say through yesterday, Ben.
Yeah. They did not have the intestinal fortitude to go into most parts of Appalachia. What they did instead was they took a very careful march up through eastern Pennsylvania and then cut up through the valley, through the valleys of Pennsylvania to get to that point in western Pennsylvania where they could, you know, harass the tax protesters. They did not go through what's today West Virginia. They did not dare step foot in that type of mountainous country because they would have got cut down. And they knew that. They, you know, Hamilton, we could say, I have poor opinions of Washington and Hamilton and some of these guys. But I will give them this.
Me too, Dr. Ben.
Yeah. But they were not idiots. They were smart enough to know that if they set foot in Appalachia proper, they would not come out. They would be buried where they laid, or they would just be left there to have the, you know, the animals tear them apart. Because the Appalachian people would have cut Washington down just as quick as they cut down the I can't remember that guy's name at Kings Mountain, I think he was a colonel. I can't remember now, but anyway.
I know the one you're talking about. I think it's referred to in the article at ZeroGov.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And that's a good story, too. It's if you go in and you read the typical telling of that story of the Battle of Kings Mountain, you don't get the full depth of it until you really realize that what you have is not just one militia going up against another or one body of – what you actually have is you have Appalachian men hearing from a distance on a word of mouth going from, you know, from town to town and village to village saying, hey, these British are coming through. They're threatening to burn farms. They're, you know, they're making these threats against us and they're coming on our land. And it was not so much.
The most subtle correction to that narrative is that they didn't say the British were coming. They said the regulars were coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And the reason it's so important to make that distinction is because when Paul Revere rode, he didn't say, as the Disney movie tells us, the British are coming, the British are coming, because he was British in the saddle at the time.
Right.
What he was saying was the regulars are out. And if we fast forward to today, those regulars are the cops.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When a good example of that is the Boston Massacre, that, you know, it was a real good publicity thing in the day to get people to hate the British. But the soldiers in the Boston Massacre that shot the civilians, those people were acting as police. They were literally acting as sheriffs under the control of the governor at the time. They were there to collect taxes and enforce the governor's laws. So it was Indeed. The Boston Massacre was police shooting down citizens. Well, more ranting and raving when we get back from this little trip to the market.
Brother Ben, you're
listening to the Freedom Fiends,
an
invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, there's some Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Freedom Fiends. I'm Ben Stone with Bill Buepert. and we're talking we're kind of talking about law and what law, you know, is and is not. And I wanted to bring up, Bill, these people who have such blind faith in law that they think that they can go into court. They can use magic words in court. They can, write their name in all capitals or put fringes on a flag or make their own license plate. And somehow they think these tricks, these really, really carefully plotted out and carefully planned tricks, are going to somehow take the teeth out of the lion. And I see that really as a almost fanatically deep level of faith in government. They may not like the
existing
government.
It's so ironic that that's the case, because I think that's such a keen observation, because what they think is that they're going into a vampire court, which is what the court is in America. The government-owned courts in America are vampire courts, because that's where you get exsanguinated, depending on whether they extract fines, parole time, probation time, or put you in a cage. And they think they're going to go glamour the vampires. They think they're the better vampire to go in there. And they really think, because like you're saying, they believe in this rule of law myth. And the reason why Ben and I say that the rule of law is a myth is this very simple reason. All law is politically motivated. All law is politically interpreted. And human beings, despite their predilections to think they have, don't have objectivity. Because objectivity isn't the human condition. Bias is the human condition.
Right.
And when you go in front of that judge has an agenda. And if I may, I want to show you just how bad it's got. Recently in King versus Burwell, Roberts, once again, given the high sign and the thumbs up to the National Socialist Healthcare called Obamacare, says this, and I quote, I'm astonished by this, Ben. In this instance, the context and structure of the act compel us to depart from what would otherwise be the most natural reading of the pertinent statutory phrase. Congress passed the Affordable Care Act to improve health insurance markets and not to destroy them. If at all possible, we must interpret the act in a way that is consistent with the former and avoids the latter. What he's saying is that if I call it the Patriot Act, then we're going to take their intent, not the fruit. We're going to take the intent of that and measure the entire act and all of its goodness by the name on the congressional edict. Talk about the banality of evil. I'm nonplussed about it.
You know, that right there shoots down all those people out there who think that, you know, if they copyright their birth certificate or whatever the magic silly thing is that
so
they
foolish.
Think.
So foolish.
Yeah. It doesn't matter. When it gets to where the rubber meets the road, you're going to get crushed because it's their game and it's not your game. And that's really it. It doesn't matter if you have a special magic club card or if you've, you know, changed your name to a certain thing, or it doesn't matter if you, you know, decided to unofficiate your birth certificate, or none of those things matter. If they want you, they take you. And if they want to beat you down, they will beat you down.
That's right. Between 1937 and 1995, the Supremes did not invalidate one congressional edict that had to do with the Commerce Clause, including, and I hope the audience writes this down if they write anything down they've heard in almost the past hour, Wicker versus Filburn, 1943 Supreme Court decision, where, in a nutshell, the man grew wheat, had wheat, sowed some of the wheat, did not sell that wheat, consumed the wheat on his own farm with his own friends and family, and he was accused of interfering with the Commerce Clause and the Commerce Act because he didn't sell the wheat on the market. And what that takes us to, again, in the legal realm, is Thomas's dissenting decision to Roberts' first decision with National Socialist Healthcare, where Thomas said, the evil of Obamacare is not simply that it is a tax, but that it is taxing not only action, but inaction. And between action and inaction, Ben, I don't know much else that the human condition comprises.
Yeah, and this has come on us slowly. A tiny little example of that is the seatbelt law, where you can actually be punished for not doing something. Something that only is going to affect you. Go ahead.
Crime is a fact. Yeah, I think drunk driving is pre-crime. A lot of people in the audience are going to disagree with this. But I think that what they're basically saying is that it's a thought crime to be under the influence. Yet, distracted driving is reaching around to bat your child, reaching for a chicken wing dropped on the floor, or put your ass at your ass.
And stick with us. We're going to come back after the news break with more on the Freedom Fiends.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Hour two here on the Freedom Fiends, and the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-gov license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments, and you can learn more about that at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org. And we are broadcasting through Libertarian Re-Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And I don't even know what that means. But I said it anyway.
I don't know if we're supposed to know what that means.
So I'm Bill Buport, and with me is Ben Stone. No, the other way around. I'm Ben Stone, and with me is Bill Buport. And we're on opposite sides of the globe.
I can't rock a beard like Ben Stone, so I can't even impersonate you. And I'm over here on the other side of the planet, philosophically terraforming the planet with my associate, confrere, and brother from another mother, Ben Stone, one disobedient surf at a time. Man, it's great to be back with you.
It is good to be back with you, Bill. And I anticipate being on the phone talking to you. It's like one of the highlights of my week, thinking, oh boy, I get to talk to Bill.
You're very kind. I feel the same.
So before the break, we were talking about these people, and you can, you know, I hate to put labels on people because they don't always match, but some of these people are called, they call themselves sovereigns or sovereign citizens, or they have a variety of other things. They talk about maritime law, and they talk about, you know,
the admiralty law.
Admiralty, that's what I was thinking, not maritime. But when it all boils down, it doesn't matter. You know, we had very famously this case not long ago with the Silk Road situation where the guy, when it all boils down, here is what the government said he did. He ran a website where other people traded in stuff that's against the law. So other people were going onto his website, were assuming that if everything the government says is true, if everything that that Ross was accused of is true, then this is the basis of their argument. Ross ran a website, or the Dread Pirate Roberts, more accurately, ran a website where other people could go to that website and make arrangements of things that weren't necessarily legal according to the current laws. So they could buy and sell things like, you know, asthma inhalers or marijuana or something else that the law has decided that's forbidden for us. And Ross didn't actually participate in any of those transactions. He just had the website that made those transactions possible. Now, he's facing life in prison with no parole over this. In other words, Charles Manson got less of a sentence because at least Charles Manson comes up for parole every few years. So according to their rule of law, Ross running a website where other people could go there and exchange stuff is worse than what Charles Manson did. It's worse than, you know, the rapist or the murderer or the, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of crime you're talking about, to give somebody a life sentence without parole.
You know, and to say this is a miscarriage of justice is an understatement. Of course, these miscarriages of justice take place in the legal system every day. Here's what I urge my audience members to do, and Ben's audience members, of course. If you have a courthouse in your county, spend 4 hours one afternoon, find a time in the next year, spend 4 hours in the afternoon watching a criminal justice judge do his work and sit there on the benches and watch. You will be disgusted. You will be sick to your stomach. He'll probably have a calculator because he's going to be calculating how much probation costs the victim, how much parole costs the victim, how much jail costs the victim. But I want to take this a step further because you made this really interesting analogy where you said he's got two life sentences and he's going to jail because he facilitated, he had a medium of exchange available where parties who wanted to get stuff that was gray market or black market could do so via his website. So why isn't the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury, who issue Federal Reserve notes and dollar bills, why aren't they held criminally liable for providing a medium of exchange for these black markets to take place?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it is the it's identical in the medium of exchange example and model that you're employing, and I agree with it.
Yeah, if we really were functioning under this imagined law, if this law really was the way people think that it is, then it would be distributed fairly like that. And so, you know, you'd have to arrest everybody at Bank of America. You'd have to arrest everybody. If two people sat down in a McDonald's and schemed out some kind of criminal activity, you'd have to go and arrest the manager of the McDonald's for that. And that doesn't make any sense, but that's essentially what Ross is accused of.
Oh, what's happened? But you know what? Ross's mother, who I had the privilege of meeting at Porkfest, and Ben, I think you may have met her too, and she gave
very
a couple
briefly,
talks.
Yeah.
She's shattered by this.
Yeah.
I mean, she's a mother. She's shattered. But what she's done really is that she has taken the javelin. She has planted it in her right hand in the ground. She's taken that shield in her left hand, and she has put her foot forward. She says, I'm going to fight.
Yeah.
Until the day I die, I am going to fight to free my, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm going to fight to free my son from this horrific system that has taken away his life. Because that's essentially what they do. When you get a life sentence in the federal penitentiary, by the way, 85% of all people in the federal penitentiary are nonviolent offenders, much like Ross is.
Mm-hmm.
Your life is taken from you. And if
yeah.
they don't like what you do, you're going to be put in solitary confinement. Or you're going to be tortured in some fashion.
Yeah.
We see a lot of police procedurals where they say, yep, wink, wink, nod, nod. He's going to go into the slammer. He'll get raped by fellow inmates and things like that. What they leave out is what corrections officers and that whole crew of corrections cockroaches do. We don't really know because that entire gulag system in the United States is a wholly owned subsidiary of the government. And they treat it like a black site,
yeah.
like the three-letter agencies
yeah.
have been doing since 2001. Frankly, one of my questions, Ben, is we know right now, as of today, 550 people have been murdered by cops in America, and that's been recorded by both UK newspapers, The Guardian, for instance, and killedbypolice.net, which I urge the audience members to take a look at. 550. We remember the meme where it said 400 a year. You and I both knew at the time. It's about three times that number. But I would suggest to everybody that that number is not reported, misreported, and underreported in that it's far more than the 1,200 that will probably be the corpse count by the end of the year at the hands of police.
Yeah.
I have no idea what the corpse and maiming count is in the gulag system because that entire system is controlled by the government, and we know that transparency is our enemy.
Yeah, you know, you think about it, not long ago, I don't know, 6 months ago or maybe a year ago, something like that, there was a hospital, not really a hospital, it was kind of like an orphanage for young boys in Florida, that it was revealed that during its, like, something like 100 years that it ran there, it was just a systematic murder hole where the, you have to call them guards, you can't call them anything other than that, but the people who were running this orphanage, you know, were horribly abusive to the young boys that were incarcerated there, and they have started to excavate the area around it, and they're finding grave after grave after grave, unmarked graves, some of them multiple, where these monsters, you know, killed these children and then would just take them out back and dump them and bury them. And this was going on for a long time in this orphanage. Now, you understand that that's not crazy fantasy stuff. That was actually happening. Now, you
can you put that in the show notes, Ben?
Yeah, I'll look up where that took place. But you think about how many prisons there are now and the kind of system that we have in the prison system. And maybe they're not just killing them and dragging them in the back and burying them like they used to do 100 years ago. But essentially, any death that takes place in those prisons, how are you going to say it's anything other than, you know, how they control everything?
Well, they'll always blame the inmates.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, if we have a war on drugs, a war on illegal vegetation, which we have really aggressively since 1972, my feeling is I would love to see every prisoner in America who was a victim of the war on drugs, victim or you know, whether it was a victimless crime, however you look at it, conduct yourselves like prisoners of war. Organize yourselves.
Yeah.
Regiment yourselves. And start doing the kind of things that we've seen historically happen when prisoners of war are in those kind of conditions and the way they protect themselves. I'd like to see that happen.
Yeah, I think that's a good – well, you know, to a certain extent, that's what prison gangs are. I know a lot of people have a bad image of prison gangs, but to a large extent, that's kind of what they are. They're a way that, you know, the prisoners can almost form a family or form a unit that they can protect each other because they're certainly not being protected by the guards.
Well, you know, I'd also like to suggest that all the police procedurals on television, you name what they are, in the past 50 years, how have they always portrayed internal affairs agents?
Oh, yeah.
Haven't they always portrayed them as monsters, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Internal affairs. And why are they monsters? Well, because they're riding herd on the cops.
Yeah.
Well, that's got to be a bad thing. You know, I don't think there's any such thing as a good cop.
Right. You know, and that's well. Maybe I'll bring it into. We're getting close to the end of this segment. I'll touch on it in another segment. I wanted to talk about this guy, Bernard von Nothaus. He was at Porkfest this year, and unfortunately, Bill, both you and I were not able to make it to Porkfest as much as we both would have loved
to. No, but I love it, and I urge everybody to go there if they can. But I'll see you there next year.
But Bernard von Nothaus, and I'm sorry if I'm butchering his name, it's a little clumsy for my tongue, but he was up there at Porkfest and gave some talks, and some people met him, and they say he was a really great guy and everything. I have nothing bad to say about him, but I wanted to bring up his, I'll tease a little bit in this segment, and then maybe I can bring it up in a later segment. What he was essentially, what he was doing was he was making silver and gold coins, you know, rounds, not necessarily coins. He was making silver and gold rounds and selling them, like a lot of you know, a lot of silver producers and a lot of gold mints do that. Well, but the difference is, he was trying to set up a money system that was outside of the federal government. You know, much like Disneyland or Disney World has their own forms of money and that you can buy and sell there. And casinos in Las Vegas do this. He was essentially doing that except with actual precious metals. And this was such a threat to the government, or they perceived it as such a threat, that they couldn't tolerate that. And I'll explain it a little bit better when we come back from this trip to the market.
Listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
Freedom Fiends.
Pouring hot molten truth down your ear hole.
Let's get fiendish.
Yeah. So I wanted to mention this guy, Bernard von Nothaus. And I apologize for his name. You know, I have such a limited tongue. It's uncultured. So, you know, and I actually have Dutch ancestors, so I ought to be able to pronounce something as simple as a Dutch name. I'm a direct descendant of a guy named Harman Hermansi van Ganvoort. And if you can say Harman Hermansi van Ganvoort two times fast, you ought to be able to say anything.
Also bleep, meneer.
So this guy was minting silver and gold. You could call them tokens, or you could call them rounds, or whatever you wanted. You could even call them coins, although that's kind of stretching it. But then, and this was the Liberty Dollars that he was creating. And the purpose of this was to have a trading medium that was outside of the dollar system, in competition with the dollar system. Now, that's kind of what we have with Bitcoin. That's what Disney World has. That's what the casinos in Vegas have. It's not all that unusual. You have, you know, grocery stores that have membership cards where you have essentially the same process, except it's all in electronic form. But this process was so offensive to the government that they not only arrested him, not only tied him up, wasting millions of dollars in court fees of different kinds and lawyer fees, tied this thing up in courts for years and years and years, but also the government grabbed, I have it here in my notes somewhere, let me just find it here, five tons of precious metals from him. Five.
Oh my gosh.
Tons. Now, I can't imagine a ton of gold or a ton of silver. I don't even my mind doesn't go. I can imagine a ton of gravel, but I can't imagine 5 tons of precious metals that they snatched up from him. And after
he'll never see it again.
Never see it again. And after years in court, the end of this thing was that he was sentenced to 6 months house arrest with 3 years probation. That was the last thing that he was sentenced in December of 2014. But
the government probably kept the loot.
They absolutely are keeping it, and he's going to try to go through legal, you know, wranglings to try to get it back. But they're not going to give it to him. They're just, you know, it's kind of. Go ahead, Bill.
The government's probably desperate too, Ben, because you've seen where the Germans and now of late the Texans are saying, we want our gold out of the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve's in a panic because most likely don't have any physical gold.
I saw a meme on the internet where it was supposed to be two guards at Fort Knox guarding an empty, a cavernous empty. And the one guard says to the other, if there's no gold here, what are we guarding? And the other guard says, we're guarding the fact that there's no gold here.
That's great.
And I've believed that for a long time. You know, there was an audit, a so-called audit in the early 80s of Fort Knox. And Ron Paul was in on it and a bunch of them. And they went down and they had a photo op where a couple politicians stood there holding a single bar of gold and there was a stack of gold behind them. But the thing of it was with an audit, if you're having an audit of pretty much anything, that means you count it. That's the essence of an audit. And they didn't. Right. They went down. They had a Photoshop. Photoshop. Little Freudian slip there. They had a photo op. In front of the gold, in front of one section of gold, and you couldn't even tell how deep the stack was. It could have been just one bar deep of stacked gold. And they
had could have been painted lead.
It could have been. Yeah, they didn't test it. There was no testing done of any kind. So, you know, that's an audit. Well, what if a bank had that kind of an audit? Wouldn't that be great? What if General Motors had to deal with that kind of an audit? You know, you'd glance across the parking lot.
You're right. In a normal discovery process in the American court system, what happens when you are the defendant? Do you have to, you know, a discovery process is a very sophisticated kind of audit that goes over documents, events, all those kind of things, and it has to be sworn to.
Yeah.
Notice they didn't do any of that. There's no sworn deposition of how much they have on hand.
Right. And that goes back to what we were saying about law. It's all a farce. There's nothing real about any of it. It's a dog and pony show, and it's keeping people entertained. It's keeping them fooled into believing that something similar to justice is really happening, but it's not. It's not justice. It is nothing but a Ringling Brothers style carnival show to keep people entertained.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
With me, Ben Stone, and on the line, Bill Buport. I wanted to mention one other thing about this Bernard von Nothaus. He was found guilty. I want to get this exactly accurate, but he was found guilty of, let me make sure I read this, making, possessing, and selling his own currency. He was found guilty on one count of selling, one count of possession with intent to defraud, and one count of mail fraud. Now, let's deal with the mail fraud first. He was selling gold and silver rounds. He was portraying them as gold and silver rounds, and you could buy them in the mail. Now, he never said this is something other than what it is. He never portrayed it as something other than what it was. He had gold and silver, and he sold gold and silver, and he sold it at competitive, actually, some of the prices he had were more than competitive. But so that's what he was doing. He was selling gold and silver rounds. There was nothing fraudulent about what he was doing. And yet he was still found guilty of mail fraud, of possessing with intent to defraud, and with selling his own currency. Now, the actual codes that he was found guilty of is U.S. Code Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 25, Subsection 485. And let me just tell
you. Do we have time on the program for you to go over the entire subsection number?
I don't. Yeah, I wish we did, but I do. I do want to read this section. It says this is the actual thing. Now they when they said this that he's guilty of defrauding and these things, this is the actual code that he's guilty of. It says A, whosoever commits an offense against the United States or aids, abets, counsels, commands, induces, procures its commission is punishable as a principal. B, whosoever willingly causes an act to be done, which if directly performed by him or another would be an offense against the United States, is punishable as a principal. Now, so what this actually says is whatever you do that's an offense to the United States is punishable under this Title 18, Part 1, Chapter 25, Subsection 485. Essentially anything you do that is an offense. That's pretty vague. I mean, how do you define that in any kind of a logical fashion?
It is, and who's really addressed this well is John Whitehead, who has done several books, and he works for the Rutherford Institute. And if the audience would look up Rutherford, he writes at lewrockwell.com on occasion and other places. But it really, it puts the rubber to the road in establishing that all of us commit 3, 4, 5, a dozen felonies a day with everything that we do. For instance, you and I were talking about drunk driving earlier and other things. If they want to manufacture a law to prosecute these malum prohibitum crimes, malum prohibitum being there, you can't do that because the government says you can't do that. And what you find, the great thought experiment to use to determine is it malum prohibitum or not is say, who is the victim? And if the answer is the state, you know that most likely, like with illegal vegetation, it is a malum prohibitum law. I would venture to say that that's probably 95% of all the law in the statute books in these United States is just that.
Yeah, I was trying to make an argument with somebody not long ago. They were saying, well, you know, if we didn't have the government, we didn't have police, we didn't have all these laws, people would just be willy-nilly killing each other. There'd be rape in the streets and it'd be terrible. Well, first off,
where does that come from?
Well, first off, that happens to a large extent today with the government.
That's right. But most of the murders are badged.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But here's the real thing of it, you know, and this is kind of a distortion of something Ron Paul said in reference to drugs and the war against drugs. Here's the thing of it. I'm talking to this person and he's telling me that without these laws, all these terrible things would happen. And I ask him, here's the thing of it. If there was no law, if there were no police, if there was no court system of any kind, would you murder someone? And of course, any good person would say, no, I wouldn't do that. If there was no law, if there were no police, if there were no court systems, would you rape? And any good person will say, no, I wouldn't do that. That is reprehensible activity. I wouldn't do that. And it's no different if you have a court or if you don't have a court or if you have a law or if you don't have a law. A person who will murder will do it with or without the law.
And guess what? Yeah, it's just like with victim disarmament laws and gun control laws. I have a news flash for everybody. Criminals break laws for a living.
Yeah.
Now, that's from the University of the Intuitively Obvious. But obviously, there's something to it. But what you have here is you have a very paradoxical phenomenon. Because we know criminals break the law for a living. Yet when the state employs all of its faculties through the police, the legal system, and all of it, in order to take these criminals down, they become criminals themselves over an entire spectrum. Everything from the terrorism provocation that the FBI manufactures in the United States, the illegal vegetation, to shutting down people's ability to buy a Confederate flag off of Amazon, to telling a baker that he has to bake a cake for people that he doesn't want to do business with. Across that entire spectrum, you have not only made criminalization an industry, you have criminalized society.
Yeah. Yeah, you've made criminals of everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and this goes also with I've done some marriage counseling in my day as a ordained minister. I've had the that's part of the thing that comes with it. It can be very rewarding doing that kind of thing, but it can also just be soul killing. But
oh, I'm certain of it.
I had a discussion with a man and a woman who were having some problems, and I'm intentionally being very, very vague here. But the woman said essentially she used the excuse that she feared for her safety from this man. Now, the man had never hurt her, never done anything, you know, physically to make her feel that way. But it was an excuse. It's a way to punish him. That's, you know, using the courts to punish her husband because she's mad at him. And she says, you know, she's going to go get a restraining order. And I said, well, what really will that do? If this guy is the type of a person who is going to harm you, then having some judge sign his name on a piece of paper is not going to change it, because the way crime works, you have people who sit down and figure out, yes, I'm going to rob this bank. I'm going to do A, B, and C. This is the process I'm going to go with. I'll go over here and I'll get this buddy of mine, and he's going to be the driver, and I got this other buddy. He's going to be the gunman, and we're going to – you plot the thing out. That's one way a crime takes place. The other way a crime takes place is something pops into somebody's head. They're angry about something, or they're passionate about something, and they do something stupid without thinking about it. Now, pretty much all crime can fall into those two categories. Real crime, I'm talking about actual, you know, violent crime where there is an actual victim. So the plotting out, if you have the law, it's not going to stop the criminal who's plotting out the thing, because he knows what he's doing is against the law. He knows he's taking a risk. He's calculating that risk, and he has a very high opinion of himself that he thinks he can rob that bank and get away with it. So the law or not having a law is not going to change his plan. He's going to do it one way or the other. Now, the person acting on passion, whether or not you have the law is not going to change whether they're acting in passion. When they're panicked, or when they're angry, or when they're scared, or when they're, you know, whatever it is that's going through their mind that causes them in that moment of passion to take that action, they do not think about punishment. They do not think about right and wrong and whether or not a judge has written his name on a piece of paper, or whether they're exactly 50 yards away or 75 yards away from the victim or whatever. They don't think about any of those things. They're acting under, in their mind, what is controlling their actions is their passion. So again, the law doesn't change anything one way or the other. It's always a matter of body cleanup and removal. And that's really all police are any good at, is hauling away the body after the crime has taken place. And, you know, there's several.
Now, is that when the cops have killed somebody or somebody else?
That goes both ways.
Yes, I mean, it does.
How often have we seen it where somebody calls 911 or calls the police because they've got a loved one who is threatening suicide, and the cops show up and shoot him?
And don't believe us, folks. Surf the net. You'll find those stories.
Yeah. Oh, boy, how are we going to take this back into a positive direction? We're coming up on...
Oh, that's so easy. I've got that wired for sound. I've got a wired for sound, old son.
Good thing. We've beat this dead horse for almost 2 hours now. But honestly, I think if I can make a point in any of this, it is that, you know, there really needs, and you have the proper terminology, but there really needs to be an understanding that there are two different things that we refer to as law. And one of those things is natural to humans. It's built within us. We know it. It's in our heart. It's in the mind of every sane person to know what is good and what is bad. And people will tend to try to do what is good as much as possible because it's just a smoother process to live under. And
it's in their self-interest to do so.
It is. It is in our self-interest as a species to help one another and to do the right thing.
Yes.
And then there is the kind of law that is just made up, and it's just the whim of some politician, and it's enforced with a club and a gun, and that kind of law is no law.
Or it's the kind of law that the government is so fond of.
Yeah, exactly, that they can just force on people and use it. You know, really that kind of law that we're talking about there is used to make politicians more powerful, give jobs to more of their friends and more of their relatives. And that's really what it does. It creates an industry of people who live off of the rest of us, a vampiric. How was it you said the courts are vampirous?
It's a vampire court, it's a vampire state, and it's exsanguination is the name of the game. I mean, draining their host of all of its lifeblood. But here's one of the best parts, and I know this is sort of like a premature redemption of the third act, but one of the best parts of this is that they can't stop exsanguinating the host until they either kill it or call the host or cause the host to turn on the remora or the lamprey and consume it.
Mm. Yeah,
they can't stop it from happening because there's never been a criminal enterprise called government that's been able to exist for eternity because they always fall apart.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Wrapping this up on the Freedom Fiends, my name is Ben Stone with Bill Buepert. Bill, how are we going to feel better about this mess?
Bill Buepert at ZeroGov.com. What I want everybody to know is that Ben sort of segued into this brilliantly, as he is prone and wont to do, because he was saying, you know, absent government law, would it be Mad Max? Would it be this kind of really rabid, violent, soul-destroying civilization? I am here to suggest to everybody in the audience and everybody in the universe who is listening to this broadcast that anarchy is what we do in our everyday lives. And I'm not talking about anarchy where we've got the black bandana and I'm at the local McDonald's and I'm tossing bricks through the window. When I talk about anarchy, I'm talking about a world full of rules but with no rulers, no people who can take away your ability to guide your own destiny as long as you're not harming others and can't do anything to you absent your consent, because your self-ownership is the primary thing that you come onto this planet with and that you leave this planet with. I'm fond of saying that fear and obedience are the brick and mortar of the state, and the collectivists are the stonemasons. Everybody on planet Earth, down to the smallest, weeest human being, has the ability to stand their ground and say, I may suffer the consequences, but no more. I own myself. And the reason why Ben and Bill and John and Terry and you name all your friends and family and community in the whole wide world that comprises what you do on a daily basis. You don't behave in a proper, civil, gentlemanly, or ladylike fashion because you're afraid of being caged, because, frankly, everybody should be afraid of that right now because the government is out of control, as governments are wont to do. You do it because it does two things. Number one, it serves your self-interest by being kind-hearted and giving. And number two, and I don't mean to go into some spiritual nonsense with this, but I do believe karma counts. The reason why I think karma is a real thing isn't because of spiritual, and I certainly wouldn't want to stop anybody in the audience from thinking that there are spiritual measures and fundamentals to karma. The reason I say that is that the more good stuff I do, the more kind stuff I do, the more I pay forward, the more I try to benefit my neighbors because it does serve my interest, the more I do that, it all comes around to me in a much more positive than negative fashion. And the more people who do that act in this truly anarchic, non-ruler mindset where their self-ownership is the primary means by which they interface with everybody and everything around them, to include animals, because I'm a real animal lover. If you do that, absent, barring accidents, things like that, you're going to have a good life. You're going to have a fulfilling life. And your soul is going to appreciate what you've done for it.
Absolutely. I agree 100%, Bill. That was
really
well said. You know, I think of it, government, there is a phrase that's in the Declaration of Independence that says something to the effect, and I'm paraphrasing horribly here, but it says something to the effect of that evils, people have a tendency to tolerate evil so long as evil is tolerable. And I think it says injustices. It probably doesn't say evil, but it's the same thought. You know, we put up with a lot, and we put up with a lot from government. And, you know, you and I have talked about, bureaucrats and politics, politic being many ticks, you know.
Being violence brokers. That's what politics is. They're violence brokers.
Yeah.
When you strip it all away.
But they're kind of like ticks sucking blood on all of us. But and oftentimes, you know, if you notice a tick, you'll do something about it. The trick to any kind of bloodsucker, the trick is to not let you know. That's why a mosquito has that sort of numbing effect in his saliva so that he numbs you a little bit right before he sticks his nose in there and sucks your blood out. And that's why we tolerate government, because so often we have that numbing effect that we don't notice what government is doing to us constantly. But at some point in time, governments always grow to the point where they're not just a little mosquito annoying you. They become an actual vampire. And at that point in time, it becomes real difficult not to stand up and say, this thing has to go. You have to pick up that stake. There comes a moment when you just can't let the vampire continue, and you have to physically put that stake through its heart. And I don't know when to draw that line or when to say, you know, it's time. But at some point in time, the host is going to lose so much blood that if it doesn't do something, it's not going to survive it. And that's, at some point, you know, the critical tipping point is going to happen.
And these hosts are signing off.
Thanks a lot, Bill. It was great talking to you again.
My pleasure, as always. It's an honor, Ben.